Coming up next on The Social Hour, Pinterest is really getting into the recipe game. Facebook is like an infectious disease. And do you want to send snaps from your Mac instead of Snapchat the app? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 146, recorded Thursday, January 23rd, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/social hour. That's lynda.com/social hour. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 270,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/social hour to receive a free Power Pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I would love to tell you that I was in Canada, which I am, but I don't really want to promote that I'm a Canadian right now because of some of the trending topics on Twitter that include Rob Ford and a pop star who shall remain nameless, because these two Canadians are really giving us kind of a bad reputation in the social media world and beyond, Sarah.
Well, I have
it's not
to
not a good thing.
And as we discussed before the show, that you had apparently promised somebody that we would not go into detail about either of these people, and that is fine with me. However, I will say that Canadians have enjoyed a pretty impeccable reputation up until recently. So maybe it's time to show the world that not everybody is friendly and polite.
I think this is the time, although I didn't think we would do it with such brute force with two individuals who are stealing the headlines for their constant substance abuse, their inability to drive sober, and many other things. But nonetheless, it's not a great day to be Canadian, especially if you're in the social media world. But, you know, I'll be back down in the States soon. Hopefully it's better.
Yeah, well, yeah. Now you know what the rest of us feel like all the time. All
good
the
point,
time.
Sarah.
Bunch of comedians. All right, well, let's start with some of our top stories. We've got a bunch of Facebook stories, but I thought we could at least start with something a little bit more fun. And this is Pinterest launching a recipe search engine. They had acquired recently a company by the name of Punchfork. So what it looks like Pinterest is doing, and this makes perfect sense to me, really, is to integrate a little more of that. Not just, hey, pin pictures of food, but there's a back end to it. You've got a recipe section. You have different categories when you want to pin something, the types of different recipes: vegetarian, gluten free, paleo, that sort of thing. So, I think that this gives the incentive for people who are very, very interested in not just collecting recipes, but have a specific diet. Our foodies. There's a whole big community of people who want to talk about food online. And I think Pinterest, up until now, sort of provided a place for them, but this is more of a direct solution.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And just based on this article, when you look at the percentage of content that is really related to food on Pinterest, I mean, it grew to almost 18% in the fall of 2013. Yeah. So when you look at how many people are sharing food-related content, you see that something like this, a search engine of sorts, makes perfect sense. Now, Sarah, do you remember a couple of months ago we had a photo that we talked about on the show? I think it was on Wired magazine, and it was like the science behind Pinterest photos, and it was the most shared photo ever on Pinterest. And of course, it was food, right?
Yep, that's
so
right.
So they really realize, I think, more and more that's such a big part of their audience. But I wonder what this will do to some of the recipe sites that are out there in terms of giving them so much competition, because traditionally those sites have really been ahead of the game and have enjoyed a great deal of success over the past few years.
Yeah, especially since Pinterest. I mean, it really, it's almost as if anytime Pinterest gets some attention for a certain kind of thing, whether it's home improvement or recipes or wedding dresses or whatever it is. I'm starting to make it sound like a girl site again. But you know, people say, oh, it's perfect. Pinterest is the perfect solution. I never knew that I had it at my fingertips. So I think you're right. Pinterest is for anything. This sounds like what they've done. And you know, it took them about a year after acquiring Punchfork to actually roll out what the acquisition was all about. So they've obviously been working behind the scenes to make sure that it looks great. But what does it do to recipe sites that only do one thing? I mean, those recipe sites probably don't have to worry about anything in the short term, because if you're interested in food and you don't need to use Pinterest for anything else, there's no real incentive to switch over. But I wonder long term how much it'll eat away at established properties online.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one of the key things is to make sure if you are a recipe site that you do have great Pinterest integration, right? So you make it easy for people to pin stuff, maybe you have badges on your site, whatever it might be. So interesting to see this. So it looks like it's in the web version only and coming to mobile soon. So people can check it out right now, but just not on mobile devices just yet.
Which is too bad, because that's the Pinterest I like the most. Pinterest on my iPad that's really the only time I spend more than a minute or two on Pinterest. I just prefer the mobile version, but it'll happen.
Yeah, it's perfect. Now, this next headline that you found, Sarah, I have to ask you, are we saying GIFs or GIFs? Have we decided?
Well, I know it's a bit of a controversial topic, but I think if you want to say it appropriately, then the answer would be GIF. Okay. If you want to talk about peanut butter, the answer would be GIF. And I don't think that the creator of GIFs knows what he's talking about, because apparently he says to call it GIF, and I think that he's a little confused.
He's confused. Okay, so we're gonna call it GIFs. I'm with it.
You usually call it whatever you want. It's like I've done it one way for too many years. I can't back down now. I can't.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. And since there's going to be more and more of these on Pinterest, we'll probably be talking about it more than once.
Yeah. So Pinterest is experimenting with animated GIFs. Of course, those are, you know what animated GIFs are. It's sort of that looping short. It's not actually a video, but it looks like a video. It's a variety of images that are looped together. And at first I thought, oh man, what is this? You know, Tumblr 2.0, the animated GIF thing is a little played out. Does Pinterest really need to do this? It's going to make everything kind of almost seem like a little too brazen and sort of shouting at you. But when you think about certain kinds of Pinterest boards, for example, in the Mashable article, they use a couple of fashion photos as examples. Then you start going, well, okay, you know what? That kind of makes sense. Emma Watson doing a little turn on the red carpet, for example, and maybe this is a Pinterest board about a certain kind of material. Who knows? I mean, whatever it is, I can see that there are certain situations where that would actually make a lot of sense, and it would make a board more dynamic. What do you think, Amber? Is it too loud, too messy?
You know, I don't know. It's one of those things. I feel like I don't love GIFs. I mean, it's not something that I've been drawn to over the years of using the web. And I feel like sometimes it can just get annoying. But I guess there are certain cases where it does entice someone to read more just because there is that moving image. But generally speaking, I have never really been a huge fan. But I think for the Pinterest audience, it might work because it is so visual. And I'm sure there are, you know, little things that people may want to see movement in. So it could make some sense. Although, Sarah, I have to tell you that I'm literally like drawn to how thin this model is in the picture, and it's hard for me to avoid anything but that right now.
Yeah, really, I know. Come on, girl.
Wow.
She needs some GIF.
She needs
now
some
I'm
GIF.
Talking about peanut butter. A lot of calories in GIF. It's also worth mentioning that this seems, at least at this point, to be sort of an opt into the animation. You see in the lower left-hand corner, you have a little GIF button there. You can probably choose to press it or not. So that's nice. It's not, you know, it kind of reminds me of Instagram. The videos will autoplay, but you actually have to press the audio button if you want the sound to come out. And I've found that that's pretty much a great solution for me. It doesn't really bother me otherwise. So whether or not they're going to auto loop for you in the future remains to be seen. But at least for now, it seems like we're getting just a little bit more rich media on Pinterest, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a good thing. I mean, they probably know their audience better and know just they have to kind of keep staying ahead of the curve and offering new things. I mean, that's one of the things I find with most social networks we've talked about over the years is if they stop innovating and tweaking and adding interesting things, then people kind of leave. And I think this next story we're going to talk about is probably a good example of this, although it's a little extreme. This is an NBC News story that is based on a study at Princeton that you found about Facebook being like an infectious disease and will lose 80% of its users.
Pretty extreme. I know. And this is getting so much attention online because people are saying this is absolutely a crazy study. It's, you know, downright irresponsible to be quoting numbers like 80% of Facebook's users are going to go away. Well, if you look at it in a little bit more detail, this is, and yes, again, this is a study from Princeton University, and they were using models that that actually mimic the way a disease would spread, which is kind of funny because obviously Facebook has enjoyed explosive growth worldwide. And it's, you could almost think of it not unlike an epidemic of certain kinds. The research says that ideas are kind of like diseases, the way that they spread infectiously between people. I know I agree with that part of it. But then it goes on to say, well, they eventually die out. Idea manifestors lose interest with the idea. They no longer manifest the idea. And then that can be kind of thought as turning into an immunity to that idea. So putting all of this data in one place, Princeton says, yeah, 80% of that peak user base is going to die out between 2015 and 2017. And by the time we get to about 2018, 80% of those people will move on to something else. Okay. 80% is really, really high. I mean, we're talking billions and billions of people here. So
yeah,
that's a little nuts. However, well, potentially billions of people because Facebook's still on the rise. However, you know, okay, you know, that's not going to happen by next year. I agree with that. I think this is an overblown version of what probably is reality over the next, what, 10 years, let's say? Am I looking out too far?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting because I didn't realize I was talking to someone yesterday and we were talking about the 10th anniversary of Facebook, which is coming up on February 4th, which is hard to believe that Facebook has been around for 10 years. But it's interesting. I don't think they're going to get to the point of losing 80% of their users in the next couple of years. But I do think not only are they going to lose users, but more interestingly, there are so many people who just seem to want to kill Facebook, right?
Yeah.
Like studies that they're doing just to kind of explain that, you know, Facebook's success is over. They're going downhill as far as the number of people who are using the service. So it just feels like, I don't know if they can win. You know, once people feel like it's time for you to die off or over you, I think it's a hard thing to really come out of. So I don't think they'll get to the 80%, but I think they have a really tough battle ahead of them, especially as companies and researchers want to try to pull them down. I mean, this stuff is not helping them at all. Imagine a headline like this, Facebook infectious disease will lose 80% of users. I mean, that's the last thing you ever want to see.
Yeah, that's ever. Very true. And there is this vitriol aimed at Facebook that I can't think of any other network that gets that kind of negative attention. And besides the fact that there are some privacy issues, and I can't even really think of anything too horrible that's happened in the last year, at least that affected me too much. But there are things like that. But people refuse to use Facebook. Not everybody. In fact, many, 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 many people do use it. But the people who don't like it really kind of want to see it die. And maybe it's because it's just too everywhere. Too many people use it. It tries to be too many things. It tries to be too many different services and solutions. But I also think that, you know, there are these stories too, and these are true, that fewer teenagers are saying that they sign up for Facebook accounts because they have other options. And that'll just continue because that's sort of just the evolution of technology. So then you kind of become, it's like the, you know, CBS of social networks, you know, where for at least, you know, in the U.S. these networks get really scared when they don't have a young enough audience, where it's like, well, if it's all baby boomers and older that are watching our programs, well, they're going to die eventually. And how do we get the younger people? And so then it turns into, how do you reinvent yourself to be attractive to that younger set? And I don't know if Facebook can do that because it's already established itself as the social network for everybody. And that includes aunts and uncles and
grandparents.
And your parents. Yeah, and your grandparents. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think with advertisers, obviously, they're probably able to get more money if they do have that younger audience. And that's one thing that has always been a positive thing for them. But you're right, as it skews older, it becomes definitely more difficult. But I mean, the numbers are so large as far as how many people continue to use it. So I think they're okay for a little while, but I don't think it's going to be an easy road at all. I think it's going to be one of those networks, and I hate to say it, but you know, you compare it to MySpace. We've done it many times on the show before. And as soon as people start, you know, as soon as we see that big viral video making fun of Facebook, there've been a few, but I think we'll see more and more of that. And then people just want to kind of pull it down and squash it till it's dead, like an ant.
Yes. And while they do that, Facebook is going to continue to try to make as much money as possible. its mobile ad revenue is doing quite well. It's about 50% of Facebook's overall revenue, I believe, was the last number that I heard. Facebook said in a blog post yesterday that it was starting to test Facebook ads in third-party mobile apps. Now, we talked about this on TNT a little bit, and my first reaction was, aren't they already doing that? I feel like this is like a story I've heard before, and that's because, yeah, Facebook actually has been testing this out for the last couple of years. What they haven't done, though, they've run similar tests, but it was always an outside ad-serving platform instead of working directly with advertisers and publishers. Now, if you're saying, I don't really understand the difference would be something like if Facebook wants to advertise to download a new Mafia Wars game. I don't even know if anybody plays Mafia Wars anymore, but you get the idea. They might buy ad space in someone else's app in order to keep from diluting all of their own app ad space on their own network with advertisements for Mafia Wars, where then we as people who should be on Facebook all the time would say like, oh, I've had too much of this. It's very annoying. I'm just going to go ahead and block this ad. So it's more of ads that directly benefit Facebook showing up in other mobile companies' apps directly.
Well, I'm sure this is good news for people who are developing apps, right? You know, obviously there's an opportunity for more revenue, so that would be kind of exciting for them. Yeah, this doesn't feel all that different to me. I mean, sure, maybe it's a little bit of a pivot as far as what they've been doing currently, but I don't know if I'm more concerned about this as far as privacy. Like in the article, they kind of touch on the fact that maybe people will be concerned about privacy, but at the end of the day, you know, I mean, I think Facebook is kind of throwing spaghetti at a wall and experimenting with lots of different types of advertising, particularly in the mobile space. So this just kind of makes sense for them and I think can be a good thing for some of those app developers as well.
TechCrunch notes that they contacted Facebook and a spokesperson told them that ads will use Facebook standard targeting to show more relevant ads along the lines of interests and pages you like, etc. Also that the ads won't be labeled to look like Facebook ads. The company wants to use Facebook targeting capabilities to show people more relevant ads in other mobile apps. Peter Kafka over at Recode says he thinks that there'll be app install ads. And what that kind of ad is very specific, not just, hey, maybe you like Candy Crush. It's click here to install Candy Crush right now, because it's a very actionable ad item that ends up working out really well. Now, over time, let's say in the iOS App Store, for example, Apple could say, you know what, we're not comfortable with one company being able to basically push installs for their app in another company's app. It hasn't happened yet, but the implications may be a little bit different down the road. This might get a little bit messy as to how much control a company can have over your behavior in another app that it doesn't control, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think that does make sense. I mean, it's interesting because I feel like when I think about mobile ads and I think about in-app advertising, the only thing that I see happening right now, and I know this is not all that social, but I notice a lot, especially with kids apps, and this is so horrific, Sarah, I don't know if you've seen this at all, but just the amount of in-app advertisements and some of the ridiculous costs that are built into them. I have to wonder what app developers are thinking sometimes. I just downloaded a game for Connor the other day. I mean, he's 4.5 and literally he's going to click on things and they're, you know, he's buying like $99 if he wants to buy extra gear for his character. I'm like, $99? I mean, that feels like criminal, you know? So this stuff to me is just not quite as extreme as what they do within apps for kids. And I spend a lot of time in those. So maybe I'm a little jaded, perhaps.
Well, but you know, you've got good reason, you know?
Yeah.
Gotta raise them right. Just to mention, since we're talking about Facebook. Sheryl Sandberg has become one of the youngest U.S. billionaires. And she's 44 years old, and she's one of the youngest female billionaires in the entire world, according to Bloomberg Billionaires Index, something I will never be part of. Oh, well.
Yeah, good for her. I mean, what do you say with a story like this? You're like,
exactly.
Oh,
I've got nothing but positive things for Ms. Sandberg. You go, gal. I mean, of course, unless you hate Facebook and you hate what she's done with it, but I think pretty much across the board, people will agree that she knows what she's doing anyway.
I can never understand when you get to that point, you know, why you bother really doing anything anymore. Like when you just want to pack up and move to an island and just kind of cut any type of losses you may have in the future and just get out of there. But nonetheless, it's good that she's sticking with it, and I definitely respect her. So great news for her on that front. But you're right, Sarah, we may not make it to the billionaires list unless, what about our Skype filtering app?
The Skype filtering app. I had forgotten about that. Yeah.
I know.
Well, it's like we can, now that it's 2014 and it's a new year, we can like devote 20% of our time, kind of like Google engineers do, to our outside projects, and then we'll be wildly successful.
I know. Do you ever feel, it's interesting though, covering this space, and I know you've done it for a really long time and I've been doing it for a while as well, and it's so interesting to watch people who you've kind of interviewed early on and you've talked about the companies and then they rise to, you know, such success, and you sort of wonder like, why am I still reporting on this stuff? Like, why am I not doing anything? But nonetheless, just an observation.
I think that's a really common feeling. And I've actually heard people in, I think we could, you know, call us being in the media industry. I mean, we're in the tech industry as well, but I would consider us more on the media side of things. You do get a lot of people who say, you know, I'm tired of reporting on, everyone's fortunes. Everyone's building these tangible things and they're changing the world. And we're kind of on the sidelines talking about it. And, you know, that's who's stopping us?
It's true, Sarah.
Skype filters.
This could be our year. Watch out, Sheryl.
That's right, Sheryl. Bloomberg Billionaires Index. Make room.
Whatever. Poor Sheryl.
Oh, all right, quick reminder. The Social Hour, now that we're in a new year, speaking of 2014, we have a new time. We are live now on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Amber and I are very happy about that. And for the most part, we've gotten really good feedback from all of you as well. It seems like for many, it's a better time slot. So that is great. But don't ever worry if you can't watch us live, because although we do enjoy the live chatting and tweeting and feedback that we get, you can always watch our show on demand as well. If you go to twit.tv/TSH, that is our website. You can watch every episode right from the website, or subscribe and watch in the mobile app or the Apple TV or the Roku or the TiVo of your choice. Whatever you want to do, we make it as easy as possible. And of course, everything that we talk about, our links to articles and little tips and stuff like that are also on those show pages as well. So you can always keep up with us. And of course, you can always email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, before we get into... Oh, go ahead.
I would just say we're also family friendly. I just got a tweet from Nate who says that he is multitasking tonight, watching Social Hour with Amber Mack and Sarah Lane, with his 9-year-old next to him playing or watching Minecraft videos. So it looks like we're family friendly too, Sarah.
I am happy to hear that. And I hope that your 9-year-old does not follow me on Twitter. But no, absolutely family friendly show. Everybody, social knows no age limit or boundary.
They know more than we do, basically. That's
kind
of reality.
Yes, that's actually the reality of it. All right, before we get into some of our social tips and some spotlights of the week, let's take a moment to thank Lynda.com for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. You're probably interested, if you're watching The Social Hour or listening to The Social Hour, not just in what's the latest and greatest, but also how you can use social media to hone your own social skills. We all want to learn more about that. What's neat about Lynda.com is that you can sign up for really easy to follow video tutorials that will help you learn these skills from industry experts. It's a subscription base. Members receive unlimited access to thousands of online video courses that cover not just social, not even by a long shot, all areas of software, creative, business skills. You can learn to start a blog using WordPress. Maybe you've just never done that before and it always seemed a little daunting. You can figure out how to use Google AdWords to actually advertise effectively. You can take better photos just for your social media posts. You can become, I always want to be that woman that people say, Sarah Lane is like the best photographer. Wow, she should just be a pro. But I don't really know how to do that. That's where lynda.com comes in handy. That's exactly what it's made for. People like us who have an interest in following along at their own pace, learning new skills, new software, keep up with technology. In fact, new courses released include Up and Running with GoToMeeting, Making Decisions, and Outlook Web App 2013 Essential Training. This is all stuff that, you know, maybe you need to know. You know that you need to know. Maybe you don't have a tutorial place that your work is going to pay for or give you the time for. So this is something that you can do in your own time. What's also great is that you can watch from your computer, your tablet, your mobile device. Whenever you have time and energy and you feel like absorbing some information, you just learn at your own pace and at your own schedule. And by the way, if you start a tutorial, let's say on your phone, on your smartphone, and you pick it up later at home on your computer, that's fine too. Lynda.com is smart enough to remember that. So, time to learn something new in 2014 with Lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire course library. Or if you want to go $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan. That includes exercise files, lets you follow along with the instructor's project. It's a little bit more of like a drill down, get a little bit more of that granular information using the same exact assets the instructor has as well. You can try Lynda.com right now, though, for a free 7-day trial. So don't even have to pay for anything. You can just check it out and start watching some tutorials. If you go to lynda.com, that's lynda.com/social hour, you can access the whole library. That's over 2,000 courses totally free for an entire week. They've created a playlist with some suggested courses to get you started, but again, it's all up to you. That's lynda.com/social hour, and we thank Lynda for their support of our show. Okay, what is our social marketing spotlight of the week.
All right, Oscar Mayer is doing something kind of creative, one of the most unique campaigns I've seen in a while, and this is all happening on February 7th, and there's a hashtag to go along with this campaign. It's called hashtag tweet to lease. Now, it is focusing on an Oscar Mayer car that looks like a hot dog. This is 27 feet long, 14,050 pounds, and you can get a chance to basically drive around in this car for a day. They supply the driver, but you have the car for 8 hours, and they've done a fun little video to go along with this as well to be able to promote the contest.
Huh.
So this is the video. They are showing off what looks like, it looks like a slick new car campaign, right, Sarah?
It does. Yeah, it's exactly what it looks like.
Driver who demands function. Turns out, it's been a while. Introducing the 2014 Oscar Mayer Wienermobile.
I want it.
Wienermobile.
Give it to me.
I don't know what you would do with this for 8 hours, but yes, tweet to Lisa if you want to take part in it. They're going to randomly select a winner. Like I said, you get it for 8 hours. And the article on Ad Age is kind of interesting. I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but towards the end, they talk about how, I don't know if they used to have these Wienermobiles as part of the company, and they're kind of resurrecting them to appeal to the social media audience. So I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah.
Clever, in a weird way.
It's hey, listen, if you make a little mini into a Wienermobile, you're going to get a thumbs up from me.
Yeah, you can't really go wrong, right?
Yeah, I don't know how much it's going to sell hot dogs, because I assume that that's the real point of all of this. But yeah, I don't know, Amber, are you a hot dog person? Like, I can't even talk about hot dogs with any sort of intelligence at all, because I don't know who eats them.
Am I a hot dog fan? Not really. I can't remember the last time I even had a hot dog. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are big fans, so they'll be totally into this. But it does feel like they have the perfect type of product, and they have this great history with the automobile that they would appeal to a social media audience, right? I mean, it's kind of the funniest things. It looks like in the article they gave Wienermobiles in the past to social media personas, and they say like hashtag hell on buns. I don't even know if this is a true story, but they've been having a lot of fun with this and experimenting with it. Will it help them build their brand? I mean, how do you measure the success of this? That's sort of where I would love to get a little more information about it. But if you get judged for being unique, I guess they kind of win the game.
I guess so. Yeah, we have a couple people in chat saying Wienermobiles are not new, you guys. They've been around forever. But the giving away of Wienermobiles via Twitter that's new to me anyway. And yeah, I think that's a good question. How do you measure the success of the campaign? What do you do if you're Oscar Mayer, the company? Do you, just check engagement, the number of times that your brand is mentioned, and see if it has to do with the Wienermobile? I don't know. It certainly gets me smiling. So I guess it's a little bit of a goodwill thing.
Exactly. And the thing is, like I mentioned, I mean, I know those Wienermobiles have been around. I can't believe I keep saying this. Like, how am I not laughing as we say this every time? But anyway, I know Wienermobiles have been around for a long time. And I think that's kind of part of the point, in the sense that you have these companies that have a long history, and they're kind of resurrecting things from their history. And another perfect example of this is when Lucky Charms cereal went, and they took their television ads that they did in like the 70s or 80s, and they auto-tuned them for a YouTube audience, right? And I think that's kind of cool, seeing people basically take a little bit of the old and kind of revamp it for a new generation and a new audience. And in that case, I think it's kind of an interesting idea, not to forget about your history altogether and just go with something entirely new, but bring it into the fold as you try to appeal to a new digital and socially savvy audience.
Jen Coco in chat says they should allow you to drive a Batmobile instead. I bet there'd be more takers for that. Have you seen the Wienermobile?
Come on, the Wienermobile's awesome.
Batmobile's... it's cool, but it's no Wienermobile.
It's too common, Sarah.
Yeah, you need something bright that's going to, scream mustard. That's what I'm looking for in my life. Batmobile, a little 2012 for my taste. Okay, on to our spotlight. This one actually is a suggestion from Sean, who wrote in and said, I enjoy traveling and flying, but I can't always remember what flight I have coming up or what I've been on. I found an app that acts as a tool, but also acts as a social way of flying. I can see where my friends have flown or are flying too. This app is called Flying, and it's actually from the makers of, Seat 4A or Seat 4B, which is the service that helps you look and see what, if you're trying to figure out, I want a seat with the most leg room, or I definitely don't want a seat next to a bathroom. You look it up and see what kind of plane the layout is before you get on it.
Is that Seat Guru, Sarah? Or is it called Seat 4B or something like that?
It's okay. Let me just look it up. Seat 4A. You are, but it's same idea. Yeah, Seat 4A. But this app has been out since December 30th, or at least that was when it was last updated. I haven't heard of it, but I went ahead and downloaded it. It's free, so, no harm. And my main problem is that forgive my tea here. My main problem is that none of my friends are really on this app. If I go to flights, I've got a nice empty feed here. I can go ahead and add a flight for myself. Now, that doesn't seem like anything that's particularly helpful for me besides just jotting it down. But if you use something like, what does it matter with me today? I can't think of anything. The service that helps me remember my flights is a service.
Is it TripIt?
TripIt, yeah, thank you. When you have something like that, that sort of integrates into my life without me having to enter anything specifically. So something like TripIt will pull from an email, will know that that's an airline information, and then you add it to your calendar, that sort of thing. But this is, I guess, a little bit for posterity, and also to remember what routes you took and when. But more importantly, then it kind of turns into what routes your friends took. Now, again, I've got a few friends because I found them just by looking up friends in my settings area. But there's not much to see. you've got some sort of little travel pack stuff. You can, you know, I've become friends with a couple of people. I mean, I guess over time, this will start getting interesting because that is a little ticker that shows that I've flown exactly 0 miles since using this mm-hmm. app. But over time, as I tend to jot things down, I will maybe enjoy, you know, I don't know, an 8,000 number or something like that. I guess, Amber, I don't know if this is just a little bit too niche for most people. I don't really like flying that much, and I fly a lot less than you do. Is this the sort of thing that you would get a kick out of? Like, if you're going to fly anyway, let's figure out how to enter the data and start getting some interesting metrics out of it?
Yeah, you know, I guess if I flew, I mean, I do fly quite a bit, but I'm kind of like you, Sarah. I don't love flying, to be honest with you. I find it pretty horrible. Out of everything that I do in my work, it's the thing that I enjoy the least. So I don't know if I want metrics, but for people who fly a ton and who are really into this type of thing, but I think you're right. I mean, it's a very small percentage of people. It's like the people who are flying, you know, maybe 100,000 miles a year or something like that, and they have some really great stats, like Johnny Jett, who I think you know.
If he used this, it
would be kind of neat and interesting, right? Because of the frequency of how much he does travel.
I think the app is hard to see how fun it would be when there's not a lot of information in there. You know, again, I took Sean's advice and I downloaded it and I said, looks like a nice app, but there's not much that it can give me right away. I sort of have to start populating it with my information. And yeah, if you don't fly that much, you're probably not going to get that much out of it. But if you've got a group of friends, I don't know, particularly if maybe you're in a certain line of business and you find that you're getting on a plane constantly and you know a lot of people in your industry, you can, you know, as long as you like them, you guys can kind of have fun competing with each other and knowing where everybody else is and that sort of thing. You get little stamps. There's a little bit of like a reward model too. So I don't think it's a bad app. I'm just not sure I'm the target audience.
It's like gym rats, though. You know, people who are always at the gym and they like those apps that will kind of report how much and how frequently they go there. So I think in that sense, it doesn't make some sense for a certain number of people. Before we get into our viewer feedback, we just had a couple of tweets there I wanted to share.
Sure.
And one is from Monica, who just tweeted me over an article from Time, who did write a post that says Facebook isn't about to lose 800 million users. And the article dives into why that is and kind of says that they even had a statement from someone at Facebook who said that that research study was totally ridiculous. And they go on to talk about why the infrastructure at Facebook is much more advanced than anything MySpace ever had and blah, 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 blah. So if you want to read kind of the other side, that's a good one to go to. And then Nate wrote back to say that we made his 9-year-old look up and smile from Minecraft and that she can be very hard to impress. So
All right. The
9-year-old.
We got the 9-year-old to smile. Awesome. Thanks, Nate.
Always a good thing.
Thank you, Nate. All right. We got another email from Matt in New York who has a Twitter question. Says, how do I market my blog versus marketing myself? It seems like if you want your blog to do better on Twitter, many people recommend using the blog editor's full name rather than making a generic Twitter account for the site, similar to how @Mashable on Twitter became Pete Cashmore's Twitter account. The issue is, I don't want my name to be the Twitter front for the blog because I have a presence for my day job, and I don't want to confuse the two. I'd love to hear your thoughts on best practices and what your advice may be.
That's a great question, actually. I think a lot of people run into this, right?
Mm-hmm.
They definitely don't want to kind of mix channels and they want to separate things more than some people do. And I think in this case, especially because Matt mentions that he does have a professional job and he doesn't want his name out there, I think it makes perfect sense to market around whatever his handle is as far as promoting that blog. The only thing I would say, Sarah, is that I feel like it has to be something pretty catchy, right? In the sense that, you know, Mashable obviously has a big brand, but Mashable itself is just a great Twitter username. So he has to do something that is really catchy and maybe uses that everywhere. Like look at Scott Stratton, who we've had on the show before. Mm-hmm. He goes by @unmarketing everywhere online because he has a really popular blog and then a book @unmarketing. So the reality is it can be done, but I think you have to push a little bit harder and try to brand yourself even more beyond just Twitter too.
Yeah, I think if I understand Matt's question, and it was worded a little strangely, but if you have a new blog and you obviously have your own name and maybe this is a side project, how do you choose what to call it? How, you know, that blog's presence in other places, is it your name because you're obviously the same person? Yeah, do you come up with a clever idea that's sort of all-encompassing for your blog? I've wondered about that too, Amber. For years, I've thought, well, I've got SarahLane.com. I mean, that's my name. I'm never going to get rid of it. And at least if I use that as some sort of jumping off point to what I'm doing lately, it makes sense. But it's not all that catchy or exciting. And I know a lot of people who blog and or tweet and or have many presences in a variety of places on the web that is, you know, like John Gruber and Daring Fireball. That's one of those things mm-hmm. where it's like, there's probably a story of where that name got chosen. I don't know the story though, but it's like, I know exactly what that means. When someone says that, I'm like, I know exactly the kind of content. I know exactly where to go. Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense to me. And that sort of happens over time because it's more of a reputation thing. So maybe that's sort of the answer that I'm getting at, is it's more of what you do behind the name rather than the name itself that's most important.
Yeah, and I think you got to kind of push that much harder, right? If you decide to not use your name, because sometimes people by default may just look your name up and they find you and they follow you. But if you're using your blog name or a kind of a new handle, something you create, then you just have to work harder to be able to brand it that way. But there are plenty of examples of how it can be done. And I think for someone who has a job where they do have some professional work that they don't want to kind of mix those channels, then I think it makes a lot of sense to come up with a different handle you use online. There are people I know, Sarah, I don't know if you have the same experience, where I sometimes, not that I don't know their real names, but I know their Twitter handles, and so I just call them by that. There's a woman in my neighborhood, and I know her name, but she goes by @Wallabina, and I call her Wallabina everywhere. So it can be done, but it requires a little more effort, I think.
Yes, I think even though it's a little bit confusing, I think that's a really mark of a successful moniker, right?
Yeah, it really is.
Kevin Rose's wife, her name is Daria, but she goes by Summer Tomato everywhere. And I mean, it's all I can do not to call her Summer, because because it just, that's, you know, it works. It's a great name. I never forget it. I know what her name is, but I just think of her as named Summer.
So. Yeah, so choose something that you will still want to use 3 or 4 years down the road. I mean, be clever, but maybe not too clever. In the sense, you know, Summer Tomato is really cute. My friend Wallabina, you have @Unmarketing. I mean, those are things that they don't kind of wear on you over the years, and they're cute and they're memorable. So I think you just have to put some thought into creating a name like that you're good with. And that becomes your handle on all the different sites you use to be able to promote your blog.
All right, Amber, we got another email, lots of email week, but this is a good one from Leela. She forwarded something that she thought, listen, it really applies to both of us because there's cats involved, so Sarah's mm-hmm. happy, and there's sneezing involved, which Amber has a history of doing live on this program.
It's true, and I heard someone sneeze in the studio like 15, 20 minutes ago. That was not me, for the record.
Oh, really? It wasn't me either. Maybe it was Jason Howell. He's had some allergies this week.
Okay.
But anyway, this comes from the Cheeseburger Network, and it is a compilation of cats in mid-sneeze. 26 cats that are just about to sneeze. And I'm just going to put that right there because I don't even know what
what
to say.
Else can you do?
I mean, it just makes itself great.
I don't even know. I'm totally speechless. Wow.
It just gets weird. It kind of looks like a human in mid-sneeze, you know? Oh, yeah, that guy.
It's not an attractive look, even for a cute little cat, right?
No. It's not.
It's
definitely not. Oh gosh. Ooh, that guy had a really good sneeze.
Okay, for our audio listeners, you need to check this out. But let me just say there's a lot of teeth.
A lot of teeth.
Kind of a snarly look.
A little snarl. Sometimes the eyes are kind of squeezed shut. Yeah, it's, I don't know. Every once in a while, I think we've really exhausted the animal meme on the internet. There's nothing left. Ooh, Grumpy Cat even made it in here. Good work.
Oh, Grumpy
but,
Cat.
But then you come out with a compilation of 26 cats sneezing, and I say, nope, there's a lot left. There is tons left.
There's so much potential, really.
Leela, you know how to make my social hour really wonderful.
We have not had an episode in the past like 40 episodes that did not feature cats or dogs. So for pet lovers, this is definitely the show for you because there's a lot of that.
Exactly.
Very cool. Mid-sneeze. Okay, don't catch me mid-sneeze. If we're ever on the show, I'm going to hide my face because that's not pretty at all. It's pretty bad, actually.
Yeah, me too. It hurts, you know? Sneezing is... you pull a muscle or something.
All right,
let's move on to... there's actually a tweet that we got that's that works in our viewer feedback, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. This is from Kulas Eisfeld. I don't know if that's their real name, but at Lagoonar Beach on Twitter, who just sent us a tweet to ask us what we thought about this situation. This is taking place in the UK right now from an organization called TalkSport. And this is a media company, as far as I understand. And it looks like one of their presenters, Stan Collymore, was being attacked on Twitter. Some pretty abusive messages that involved a lot of inappropriate comments, including death threats, racist tweets, and it kind of goes on from there. And this at the center of all this is I think a soccer match, or as they say, football match that was taking place. And things just proceeded to get very ugly with this individual who was attacking and all the tweets going out. Now, as far as I understand it from TalkSport, they have tried to get in touch with Twitter for Twitter to do something proactive to get some of these death threats and things removed. They didn't get a response. So what they've done is they're kind of holding Twitter hostage, Sarah, in some ways, in the sense that they're basically saying that they have 3 million Twitter followers across all of their different accounts, but they will not be promoting any of those accounts and they will not be talking about tweeting at all on any of the programs that they run until Twitter does something about this. And I don't think I've seen anyone take such an extreme stance, but in some ways, I guess it makes sense. And they want Twitter to be responsible and accountable for some of the content that has gone out.
This is something that this particular version of the story has obviously gotten some attention, and we're talking about it as well. But this is something that I hear pretty regularly is... you know, either an individual or a company will say, hey, listen, Twitter, you need to be responsible for stuff that's going out. I mean, yes, we know you're just the means to allow people to express themselves, but there has to be some responsibility taken. And Twitter doesn't always respond. I mean, I think in some cases the company will, if they feel there's enough attention around it and they have no choice. But it is a case-by-case basis type of a thing. I mean, what's your view on what happens here? I mean, do you think that they're going to get what they're after, TalkSport?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I had just finished reading the book Hatching Twitter, and one of the things I do remember from the book, and I can't remember which one of the founders had said it, but the gist of it, based on Nick Bilton's story about the beginning and the early days of Twitter, is that the company itself didn't really want to get in the middle of a lot of these things. They sort of saw Twitter as a platform in many ways for people for free speech. I'm not saying that these things are you know, should necessarily be included under that, but it sort of said from day one they never really wanted to meddle that much if they didn't have to. They didn't want to take a stance one way or another. But I think it's hard for them to... There's got to be so many of these issues. I mean, I think it might be just a situation where are they able to just keep up with how often this happens? Like, think about the number of tweets that go out on a regular basis. What, you know, how can they possibly do something about everything? And should they? I mean, can they? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that's the bigger question is you can't possibly just make everybody happy because there are a lot of things that are going to be said that just don't... we're not all going to agree on what a good, appropriate tweet is. But that said, yeah, then you get into these conversations about is that harassment? Is that you know, the fault of the user? When does Twitter have to intervene? And... I don't know what the answer is. I'm sure that the company, I am sure that this is a big headache because you have, you know, if it's a radio station, I mean, this is not just like some person in whereversville complaining that somebody else is saying stuff. I mean, this is an organization who's saying, okay, we're organizing a Twitter boycott because this social network refuses to you know, accept the fact that they need to do something. And I don't know. I feel like Twitter is so big that these sorts of stories are kind of a dime a dozen. And that's not, it doesn't make them not important, but I'm not sure that it really clamps down on the way that Twitter works at all.
I know. And it's not like it's exclusive to Twitter. I was speaking at an education conference a couple of months ago, and I had a bunch of teachers and administrators come up to me after the conference, and they had mentioned that there are these groups on Facebook, and they're called like Spotted At or something like that. And they're at a bunch of different schools, at least in Ontario, where I live. And what will happen is that students are taking really embarrassing and unflattering photos of teachers doing things or of students, and they're kind of making fun of them a bit and bullying them, and they're putting these up on what look like almost like official school pages, and it's just focusing on like Spotted doing this, and it's all embarrassing, it's all horrible. But I emailed Facebook to try to see if they had any stance on that and if they were doing anything about it, and I didn't hear back. They said they were going to look into it. They're aware of problems like this, but in some ways, you know, they're not as proactive, I think, as people would like them to be, and I think it hurts them a little bit in the long run. But I don't know. I don't have the solution at all.
I don't either. Well, if there's an update, whether it's good or bad for this particular story, we'll make sure to include it on a future episode of the show. Reverb Mike says in chat room, well, if somebody says something offensive using a Heil microphone — a Heil microphone is a type of microphone, we have them all over here at Twit — what do? You boycott Heil microphones? Well, it's not exactly the same thing, but yes, I see the point. It's who gets blamed.
Yeah. I have one of those microphones, and I'm not going to say anything offensive, just so you know.
Better not. We're going to take away that microphone.
There's a 9-year-old
watching. Stop using them. I have one at home, too. It's quite lovely, actually.
It is beautiful.
Yeah. We want to hear from all of you. Obviously, you help make us make our show better each week because it's a community effort. We're all very social. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail, 2626-SOCIAL. That's our Google voicemail box. Would you keep those messages to 30 seconds or less if you leave one? I know that can be kind of a challenge. Maybe if you just look at a stopwatch or something, because we get some great feedback sometimes, but it's just a little long to add into the show. So that's sort of the magic number, 30 seconds or less. You can record a video as well. You know, the same time applies. Upload it and send us a link, and we'll be sure to feature it in a future episode. All right, well, we get ready for Amber's Rad or Fad. Let's take a moment to thank 99 Designs, also a sponsor of this episode of The Social Hour. Okay, so let's say you've got a new company, you're excited, you've got a team, everybody's pumped, you want some like really cool t-shirts or business cards or you know, some website splash page or whatever that really represents the company. But nobody on your team is really good with design, and you figure, well, you know, we really want to look professional, but now what do? You know, you like put out an ad in the classifieds. I mean, this is kind of difficult. How do you find that designer that's going to be awesome and not break the bank? That's where 99 Designs comes in, because it's the world's largest graphic design marketplace. Makes it easy to get a design you love. What you do is you just go to the website and then you explain what you're looking for. You know, maybe you're looking for something, you know, for your website or for, you know, some sort of a banner ad or that t-shirt that I mentioned, you know, even an app. Maybe you've got a great app idea, but you just have no idea how to make the design look awesome so that people take you seriously. 99 Designs, you tell them the design you need, you pick a price package that works for you. Then designers say, ah, okay, I'm interested in being part of this. They submit designs. You give them some feedback. Within a week, you pick your favorites, and then you own a gorgeous new design. You've paid for it. You've chosen it. It all happens with 99 Designs. So you have access to all these talented people that you just wouldn't have access to otherwise. And you really get to pick your, you know, the best of the bunch. 270,000 designers are available to you, and there's no limit really on what you can get designed. If a design is involved, 99 Designs can help you. Projects start at just $199, and it's a 100% guarantee. So if for whatever reason things don't work out, you don't have to worry about that. You will pay for something that makes you happy. If you go to 99designs.com/socialhour right now, you get a $99 power pack of services for free. It's a little free gift from us to you. That gives you more designer time. 99 Designs will feature your design in their marketplace. It just gives you more attention overall. Again, $99 power pack, completely free if you go to 99designs.com/social hour. And we thank them for sponsoring the Social Hour. All right, Amber, what is our Rad or Fad this week?
Okay, before we get to the Rad or Fad, I just wanted to mention another tweet from Mac Interactive, who says that there's a UK equivalent of the Wiener Mobile. Sarah, do you feel better now? It's called the Outspan Car. The Outspan Car. I don't know. It's some funky looking car that looks like an orange. I'm sure there's a reason for this. Anyway, so there is a UK equivalent of the Wienermobile. You can all sleep better tonight.
Okay. Good.
Good.
There you go.
Thank you for sharing that.
Right. Yes. It's
there it is.
Oh.
It's like a big orange.
It, or a kumquat, or, yeah, I guess it's an, that doesn't,
what
that looks,
is that?
That looks pretty fun, actually. I don't know if that's street legal.
I think I would rather the outs. What is it called? Outspan?
That doesn't actually look like anything I want to get into. What are we in, a garbage dump? What is that photo? It's like kind of dirty, and so it looks kind of weird in there. Somebody's living in it.
No Wienermobile. That's for sure.
That's true. Oh, okay. All right. Well, now we're getting somewhere.
Oh, okay. People getting married outside the Outspan.
That's kind of cute.
Okay, we're obviously missing something. Cute. So if anyone in the UK is watching or listening,
please
let us
help.
Know
yeah.
the history of that car.
Would love
okay.
it.
Yeah, we would love that. So, Sarah, I know you use Snapchat. So I'm kind of putting this Rad or Fad out and over to you because I don't use Snapchat. I've maybe used it once or twice. And for our Rad or Fad this week, I wanted to talk about a new tool called Snapped that lets you view and send Snapchats on your Mac. Mm. So it's made by a third party, and it's free to download. It's an unofficial Snapchat client. And Snapped is in beta, but basically if you're on your desktop, you can send people Snapchat messages.
So it's you. It's from your Mac to someone's app, I assume. It's not just Mac to Mac. I see. So it's just one more way to quickly send a snap if you happen to be sitting at your desktop or, you know, laptop or whatever.
Exactly. Huh.
Well, okay. So I don't think it's a bad idea. I find less and less that there's something that I can't do on my smartphone because I'm sitting at my big computer. I mean, it's always right here, right next to me. And Snapchat works pretty well via mobile. So, I don't know. I mean, do you find that there's ever something where you go, ooh, if only I had my phone handy, then I could do that. I wish there was an app that's more of a, you know, a web-based or desktop app.
I don't know. I was just talking to someone recently who was describing how their teen uses social media and saying that their teen never does anything on a computer anymore. Like never, ever, ever. Everything is done on smartphones or tablets. So in that sense, I feel like Snapped is kind of interesting for a small percentage of people. But I imagine most of Snapchat users are primarily using their smartphones. And it may come in handy if maybe your phone is dead and all you have is your laptop with you, your Mac with you. But I don't know if it has. I mean, it seems like it's going the opposite direction of where Snapchat is heading, which is basically so much about the mobile experience.
Right. And that's the beauty, really, of sending photos or videos on Snapchat is that, you know, it's like, ooh, where's this person going to be? I just got a Snapchat from them or a Snap. And if you're on your computer, well, laptops are certainly mobile-ish. So, but there might be a little bit less like fun of if I keep sending you snaps from my office chair, you know, after a while you're like, Sarah doesn't really send very good snaps anymore. I don't really
Sarah's
want her.
Sarah's snaps
to.
Are boring.
Yeah, she's got boring snaps, and that's the last thing you want. You don't want to be the boring snapper.
No, you're right,
though.
And also, Sarah, I mean, it's not like you can take, I mean, so many of the snaps that I see are often selfies, and I'm just going to demonstrate. Right now, if I were to take a selfie on my computer, on my laptop, what it might look like. Ooh, I already almost killed my mic. So it would basically look, you know, like, how do you do this?
Right, right, exactly.
Right? I mean, it's not as easy. So, I don't know. I think it's a bit of a fad to pick up on, sorry about that, a bit of a fad to pick up on a trend right now. So I kind of put it in the fad category. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's just capitalizing on a service that's really popular. That's what I think. It's providing a solution that I don't think anyone really asked for, Maybe every once in a while you'll be like, I've got to take a snap and my phone is dead. Somebody mentioned phones die a couple minutes ago in chat, and I guess that's true. Although I've got a phone charger right next to my desk, so I wouldn't be able to use that excuse either. It's funny how you mentioned there's so many solutions that we just don't even think to use beyond mobile. Not that long ago, I had to send somebody a sizable sum because it was like a deposit thing because I changed apartments via PayPal. And I was at my computer, and my phone, for whatever reason, wasn't right next to me. And I'm like, I have to go get my phone. I have to send money to somebody. And it's like, I'm sitting at my computer, and it took me a while to go, wait a second, no. Back in the day, I just open a new tab, and I type paypal.com, and I can do that still. Because I'm just so used to the app versions or the mobile versions of a lot of these kind of, like press three buttons and you're done.
Especially with banking. It's so funny you say that because I do that all the time. I feel like I almost don't even know how to do online banking, but because I do everything on my mobile device, so it's all kind of mobile banking, right? So it's the same sort of thing. I'm like, if I'm paying bills or I'm sending someone money through an email money transfer, it's all on my smartphone. And if I have to go to the web and do it, it's exactly the same sort of thing. I'm like stumbling around. It seems like it's going to take forever. And I just hate that experience. So I don't know if computers are going to be obsolete, but more and more, I think we're dependent on our handy little mobile devices.
Exactly. Yes. To do all the hard work for us. So I think in conclusion, I will go ahead and say Snapped for Mac is a fad.
Yeah. A bit of a fad. Not like the Wienermobile. That thing's going to be around forever.
No. And as far as what was the name of the funny orange thing? Somebody in chat says it's actually a brand of oranges. So it's like
The Outspan.
The Outspan. I guess that's the brand of oranges. So it's just a car version of orange. So Amber, you were right. That's exactly what it's supposed to look like. Oranges. And sometimes it poses next to people getting married, which is just, great. I hope they served a lot of orange things at their reception. All right, well, that's it for this episode of The Social Hour. Remember, we are now live on Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks to everybody who is able to watch and listen to us live. However, if you can't, you can always watch and listen and or listen or do both. That's fine, too. On demand, twit.tv/TSH is our website. Amber, anything interesting coming up for you in the next week before we do this again?
I'm going to Arizona on Monday for an event for a couple of days, but that will be kind of fun. And then I'll be back in Toronto for the show next Thursday. And I'm just thinking as we're talking, Sarah, that maybe we should try to line up a couple of, at least one or two special guests, maybe the week before Facebook turns 10 and, do something fun on the Facebook story because that's a pretty big milestone in their career.
Gosh, yeah. Wow. 10 years old.
If Facebook can have a career. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe.
I think so. Let's do it.
Okay.
We've got
on the search.
We've got a little bit of time. But thanks to everybody for watching and listening. We will see you next Thursday. Until then, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber McCarthy, and we'll see you soon.